very big welcome to Now That's What I Call Sport on 98FM.
98FM, Now That's What I Call Sport with Jamie Moore.
Hello there, good morning. You are very welcome to Now That's What I Call Sport on Dublin's 98FM. The morning after, the night before, our Katie Taylor became a two-weight world champion.
I just want to thank everyone so much for the support. This is, as I said, more than a dream. The headline of a huge show from so many Irish people. I'm so, so grateful. Thank you so much.
Two world champion. Sounds good, doesn't it?
We'll welcome Dublin's Con O'Callaghan to the show, one of many Dublin all-stars from the PwC Awards over the weekend. And he's delighted that it looks like the manager, Jim Gavin, is staying on for 2020.
Look what he's put in place there. It's not just a one or two year thing that he's done. He's been there 6 or 7 years now. He doesn't like to admit it, but he's driving the whole thing from behind the scenes. So, we're obviously delighted that he's still staying on.
Shane Byrne will be here to review the Rugby World Cup South Africa champions and an amazing speech by the captain, which we'll bring to you in a couple of minutes' time. And then it's all about FAI Cup Finals Day at the Aviva Stadium. We'll first preview the Soho Hotels Women's Final with Piemont boss James O'Callaghan and the Wexford manager Tom Elms.
Sometimes it comes down to that little bit of luck or maybe the team that, you know, puts on in that little bit more effort. And look, that's kind of Cup Finals, isn't it, really? Cup Final Day, anything can happen.
For us to win the league was a great achievement and they're all delighted with that. So everybody's just looking forward to putting in a good performance now on Sunday.
Dundalk face Shamrock Rovers in the Extra.ie men's final at 3:40. Both managers Vinnie Perth and Stephen Bradley will be on the show.
It's an opportunity for us to create a little bit of history and we'll go after it in the right manner.
Both teams are full of top players and they've shown, both teams have shown on big occasions they show up and they play. Like I said, I don't see Sunday being any different.
And Shamrock Rovers defender Sean Kavanagh from Ringsend, he can actually see the stadium from his house.
From my house I can see the stadium, so yeah, it's a nice feeling and it's always one that I said I'd love to play here. And it's weird because any time I drive by with my son in the car, he'd say, "Oh, Daddy, there's your football match." So he's been saying that since the start of the season, so it's obviously, it's one that's worked out well. And I was just happy when we got here. I was always thought about that moment where he was saying that.
Now, they're trying to set a new Aviva Stadium attendance record for the FAI Cup Finals. To do that, they have to be 36,000. And we, thanks to the FAI, have three pairs of premium level tickets to give away on the show today. Two on air, one on text, the old SMS, and one on WhatsApp. And also one on our Twitter page, at 98FM. News on that in a second.
98FM. Now that's what I call sport.
Nathan Whelan is here. Bright and early, good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm very well, sir. How are you?
You'll be at the Aviva Stadium today with myself watching the games. And I actually have a pair of long johns on under my jeans because it's going to be a bit nippy.
Yeah, and I was caught out the last time that I covered a game up in the gods, but I definitely have my hat and scarf with me this week.
Yes, because the Aviva Stadium is one of the coldest places on earth to watch a football match. But if you wrap up warm, and hopefully the action in both games will keep us entertained. We'll preview those games, as I mentioned, in a few minutes' time. But firstly, the big news overnight, Miss Katie Taylor, a two-weight world champ.
Yep, she made history. She became the first Irish woman to hold titles at two weight classes and only the third Irish person in history to achieve this feat. She recorded a win over Christine Linard at two, which hands her the WBO World Super Lightweight title. She fought a clever fight against a woman who has real knockout power. She fought on the outside and picked her off. This takes her to 15-0 as a professional. She's the undisputed lightweight champ and now the WBO Super Lightweight champ as well. She's also had a glittering amateur career, as we all know, which sees 5 world championship gold medals, 6-time European champion, and of course an Olympic gold medalist as well. She's definitely an Irish fighting legend.
Yes, and she has been chatting to Sky Sports in the ring moments after that victory in Manchester last night.
There are probably questions, would your Irish fans make the journey? I think that answers it.
Thank you so much for the support. This is more than a dream to head on a huge show like this. Making history again, breaking barriers again. I'm a two-way world champion and the best is yet to come.
How hard did she push you and how grueling was that fight?
Well, we knew from the start that this was going to be a very, very tough fight. We said that Christine was the best 140-pounder in the division and we knew it was going to be a tough battle for 10 rounds, but I boxed beautifully on the outside and I boxed tomorrow for a change instead of getting stuck into a fight this time. So I just want to thank my coach, Ross, for everything he's done, for the sacrifice he's made. I wouldn't be in this position now, and I feel like I'm working with one of the best coaches in the world. And my team, my manager, Brian Peters, Eddie Hearn. I'm so happy.
When you boxed, Delphine Persoon at Madison Square Garden. If there were any questions overhanging from that, it was such a grueling fight. Did it take something out of you that you couldn't get back? Do you think you proved that you still got it tonight?
Yeah, definitely. We knew that. I still had it. I mean, I knew. I dug deep against Persoon and I came out with the victory. And I'm now a 2-8 world champion. And I can't wait for that rematch with Persoon and also a huge, huge fight with Amanda Serrano as well.
We'll quiz Eddie Hearn on the future. You're a 2-weight world champion now. What's the heaviest you think you'd be prepared to go?
If a fight out there is available, maybe Cecilia Brack, because I know it's a Simon matchup. That's an easy fight to make now, but right now I'm just going to enjoy this victory and we'll leave the matchmaking up to my team.
Let's bring in Eddie Hearn. Three big names are being mentioned there: Amanda Serrano, Cecilia Brackhouse, and the Delphine Persoon rematch. Which one, and in what order, and how do you navigate through these waters of world title belts?
Well, first of all, I want to say congratulations to a true icon, Katie Taylor. Everyone should be so proud of her. Ireland should be so proud of her, but we claim her too. She's just an absolutely brilliant example about how hard work, drive, determination and a dream can get you to the very, very top. She's an absolute pleasure to deal with. She's changed the sport on her head. 2020, the challenges keep on coming. There's the undisputed championship at 140 pounds. There's a Persoon rematch. There's Amanda Serrano's. There's Cecilia Brackhouse. One thing you can be assured of, she will never, ever duck from a challenge. She wants to test herself. She will continue making history. And Katie Taylor is an absolute legend of the sport of boxing.
Katie, I have to give you the final word. Have you got a message for everybody here and everybody back home in Ireland that's been watching this tonight?
I just want to thank everyone so much for the support. This is, as I said, more than a dream. The headline of a huge show from so many Irish people. I'm so, so grateful. Thank you so much.
Two world-weight champion. Sounds good, doesn't it?
Yeah, that is Katie Taylor speaking to Sky Sports after that win. And she's a 2-weight world champion now. Her opponent from the other night, Christina Linardatatu, I think is how you pronounce her name. She wasn't very impressed at her post-fight press conference. Take a listen.
They are protecting her. She doesn't fight like that. This is not fair for all the boxers, you know? She lost one, she lost second. What's she going to do? She's going to lose all the time and then she's going to be undisputed and say, I'm undisputed, I'm a two-weight champion and things like that. People see, people know. If she respects herself, she have to give rematch to me, to Persoon, and then she can say, I'm undisputed or I am champion in 2 weeks. I'm sorry, guys. She's your girl, but this is the truth, the reality. So if you don't want to see that, so, what can I say?
So I can take it, you're very upset.
This girl made the fight.
Even though she didn't win the fight.
This girl made the fight. Listen, any blind person can see it. You're wearing glasses. I know you can see it too. No, it's not boxing. Does that mean it's fair?
You know, my mistake was because I knew that these things is going to happen if you don't give it all. I just went for, you know, trying to kill her. I wanted to knock her out because I knew that I have to do that. And anyone that is going to fight her know that have to do that. Why? Because she's fake. She's not real. She can say whatever she wants. You can say whatever you want. But this is the reality. People can be happy with their champion. But inside they know, you know? You can't make fool of yourself.
You can't make a fool of yourself, Christina. Well, you kind of can, actually. She just said there, and the quote, Nathan, was about Katie Taylor, she's fake, she's not real. And I'd like you to read me out, please, Katie Taylor's boxing record, boxing CV, boxing wins, boxing titles, please, just to confirm if she is in fact fake and not real, as Christina Linardatatu seems to claim here.
Well, if she is fake, she's doing a very, very good job at, like, stealing 15 professional wins with zero defeats. She's the undisputed champion at lightweight. She holds the WBO super light weight title as well, and she's a 6-time European champion, 5-time world champion and Olympic gold medalist, but she's a fake according to some.
Yes. Now, this is a nice little move from one to the other, because speaking of fake, Tyson Fury made his WWE debut in Saudi Arabia and he beat a guy called Braun Strowman, apparently.
Yeah, and like it is what it is. Basically,
we This is Tyson Fury, professional boxer, who's in the WWE for now, but he's going back to box again in February.
Basically, and I'm sure it was nothing to do with a massive payday that he received for it. But yeah, as you mentioned, he fought for the WWE in Saudi Arabia. It was a crown jewel fight against Braun Strowman. Now I will give it to him. Braun Strowman is about 6'8", 6'9" as well, so they're two giants. And he did actually showcase some, albeit limited, wrestling techniques in the bout. But he was well wrapped in cotton wool. Let's make no mistake about that. He finished the bout by, quote unquote, knocking out Braun Strowman, which saw him counted out outside the ring. So it was a bit of an anticlimax for some, but you know, he was never going to be in any real danger.
Yeah, but how does a real boxer go and like do a wrestling match where you have to throw fake punches as opposed to real punches? And how does that work?
You seem to forget that Floyd Mayweather wrestled The Big Show. The Big Show is 7 foot tall, and Floyd Mayweather is what, 5'6", 5'7"?
Yeah, fair. Okay.
So, like, it's not the most horrendous matchup I've ever seen from the WWE.
Yeah, let's hear now from Tyson Fury chatting to WWE TV.
It was absolutely fantastic. Great experience. I was really happy to be here in Saudi Arabia on a massive show. And Braun definitely is the monster among men. When I hit him with that power driving right hand, I can't believe he got back up and slammed me to the floor. And you know, it was a bit of a cheap shot after the bell, but what can we do? It's WWE.
So you were victorious in your first match. Could we see more of Tyson Fury in WWE in the future?
I've got a big fella called Deontay Wilder to see to February 22nd, and then we'll see where we go from there.
Now, I saw Conor McGregor in Howth last weekend, Nathan, out with the family on Howth Pier, having an ice cream. He posted on his Instagram, and he was quite chilled out before his court appearance this week.
He was, and a good reason to be, because he wasn't really fined a lot when you think about what his millions are worth, but he was fined €1,000 for assaulting a man in a pub. He pled guilty to a single count of assault and issued an apology to the injured party once again. He assured that nothing like this will ever happen again before leaving, without giving any comment to all the journalists who waited outside for hours.
Yeah, and Nate Diaz beaten last night as well, I think by a stoppage by a doctor. He's, of course, one of Conor McGregor's many nemesis.
Yes, he was fighting in UFC 244 last night in Madison Square Garden against Jorge Masvidal for the BMF belt, which is obviously not in an official belt. But of course, he was stopped in the third round thanks to doctor's stoppage, a very bad cut over his right eye. But again, fans fuming with that result, but both fighters said they will have a rematch. So at least a positive out of that.
And one word answer, rematch McGregor-Diaz trilogy, is it going to happen?
I would hope so, yes.
That's five words, but thanks for that. You should have said yes at the end. Now, Con O'Callaghan has been speaking to our Will O'Callaghan at the PWC All-Stars. They were on Friday night in the Convention Centre, Nathan, is that right?
They were indeed, and the boys in blue came out with a lot of accolades. Seven men given special mention: Paul Mannion, Brian Fenton, Con O'Callaghan, Jack McCaffrey, Michael Fitzsimons, Brian Howard, and of course Stephen Cluxton were named in the Team of the Year. And of course, the Parnells man was also named Footballer of the Year for the first time in his career, and a huge night for the boys in blue.
And let's hear that chat now. Con O'Callaghan with Will O'Callaghan. And James O'Callaghan of P-Mount is on the way later in the show, Nathan. So it's the O'Callaghan Hour on 98FM.
Load of O'Callaghans to come.
Con, first of all, congratulations. Your second PWC All-Star. Must be lovely to be back in here picking up an individual award again.
Yeah, it's nice. Obviously, the main goal is winning All-Ireland. But to be back in here standing alongside such a classy bunch of players, it's a massive honour for me and my family and my club. And anyone and everyone who's put work and effort into my game. So yeah, it's a huge privilege to be able to be here.
We shanted to Kieran Kilkenny a few weeks ago. He was saying when the whistle blew against Kerry in the replay, he said relief was nearly the feeling that washed over the team. You really wanted to achieve this five in a row, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely, but we want to win every year. And I suppose after the first day, after the drawn game, there was that added pressure. I don't think it had anything to do with the whole five, but there was kind of that added tension, and you know, some people felt they hadn't performed and just were dying to get back out there. So to be able to go out and perform against the Kerry team, who were brilliant on the day as well, and come out on top was amazing.
That pursuit of excellence as well, there obviously has to be great internal drive in your panel to be able to get up year after year to drive yourselves to try and win again.
Yeah, there's 36 with us this year, and probably the people who don't get in the match day panels can only really be appreciated by everyone else in the group. They can appreciate the work that every single member of that 36 contributes. So, yeah.
Your own form. Obviously, you had a huge game against Mayo, a couple of goals banged in as well. That second half performance that you put in that day is nearly as well as you've played across the last few years, isn't it?
Yeah, I wouldn't even say the whole second half. I think it was a 10 or 15, yeah, 10 or 15 minute period where we kind of just were on fire there and everyone was on the ball. And that's kind of what people are striving for. That's what we strive for to do in every minute of every game, and we know that won't happen, but that's kind of what we do look to do, and even still there's improvements there.
Do you feel a little bit privileged getting to play in this team? Because, you know, not everyone gets to play in, I think, what is generally a once in generational, maybe even the best team of all time. It's for other people to decide that than you and I, but to get to play in such a great team must be amazing.
Yeah, that's it. Like, when I was only a couple of years ago, I would have been in the stand watching the lads and like playing alongside, or even coming into a camp with the likes of Bernard Brogan and Dermot Connolly and Stephen Cluxton. They're kind of your heroes even when you're younger, so to be able to play alongside them, stand beside them on a pitch, and represent your county, it's a massive source of pride for me.
I know Bernard Brogan represented competition for a place, but you're going to miss him around the place now that he's retired.
Yeah, definitely. Even the stuff that he adds to everyone's game, he's a very selfless player, so even the stuff that he'd add to everyone off the pitch, and just the crack we had with him, we've had some great days out on and off the pitch, so look, he's had a magnificent career.
Talking to many of your teammates, they do say as well, the likes of himself and some of the other guys who maybe aren't getting straight onto the starting team but are on the bench, they drive the standards as well, don't they?
Yeah, and it's kind of that selfless thing that we would value very highly within the group, that whether you're playing or not, you're representing the group, and if you're lucky enough to be playing on the actual game day, you kind of have to represent everyone in the team and do your best there.
I'm sure you would have loved to have won Footballer of the Year tonight, but your captain Stephen Cluxton has picked up that award. He's revolutionised the position, hasn't he?
Yeah, that's it. I think he made his debut back in 17 or 18 years ago, or
18
year. Years ago. Yeah, I was only three or I was only five or whatever. And to be able to watch, I've watched him for however many years, and even when Dublin weren't half as strong as they are now, he was incredible, and the level of consistency he brings to training, to matches, on and off the pitch, his analysis, it's incredible. So it's well deserved, you know.
Jim Gavin, all indications are he's going to be around for the league next year. I'm sure, first of all, you're delighted to have him as manager for 2020.
Yeah, Jim's, look what he's put in place there. It's not just a one or two year thing that he's done. He's been there six or seven years now, in charge, and that culture, he doesn't like to admit it, but he's driving the whole thing from behind the scenes. So we're obviously delighted that he's still staying on.
He sounds like a supreme organiser behind the scenes for you.
Yeah, and there's obviously, it's not just him, there's a brilliant backroom staff with Dec Darcy and Jason and even Shane O'Hanlon. There's so many people that, again, you wouldn't see them in the media or on match day, but their contribution is massive to the team. So he's a great group behind him there as well.
Con, my congratulations on your latest PWC All-Star and another Celtic Cross as well.
Thanks very much.
Con O'Callaghan speaking to Will O'Callaghan on the That's What I Call Sport on 98FM.
98FM's Now That's What I Call Sport with Jamie Moore.
Yes, good morning. You're very welcome back to That's What I Call Sport on 98FM. And Nathan Whelan is still with me in studio. Nathan, before we talk World Cup final, Pro 14 still ongoing. And my claim to fame is I had a pint on Friday night in the Summit Inn with Jack Ainger, who made his first ever appearance for Leinster. And he was in the Summit with all his mates and his family and his mum and dad, like an hour after the game, in his Leinster gear.
Wow. And did you get a picture with him?
No.
Well,
I didn't actually beat him at pool. I beat other people at pool. He didn't play me in pool. But
so,
yeah.
So that's two lawyers you're telling me now, basically. Yeah. But anyway, Friday saw Leinster got off to an incredible win. They recorded 50 points to 15 win over the Dragons at the RDS. Ulster beat Zebre by 22 points to 7 at the Kingspan, while Saturday saw the two other provinces in action. Connacht recorded an impressive away win over the Ospreys by 20 points to 10, while Munster completed a hugely positive weekend for the Irish sides as they beat Cardiff Blues 33 points to 23 at Cardiff Arms Park.
Yes, World Cup final yesterday morning, and the Springboks South Africa, the champs.
Yeah, and it was two of the most physical sides in this year's competition, according to many. England were slight favourites heading in, but they really failed to turn up on the day. The Bucks dominated the game, limiting Eddie Jones's men to very, very few chances. South Africa now become the first team to win the tournament after losing their opening game, so huge congratulations to them and Razzie Erasmus.
Yeah, 32-12, the final score. And ex-Lions Leinster and Ireland man Shane Byrne is on the line. Shane, good morning.
Good morning, how are we?
We're good, thanks, yourself?
All good.
So what did you make of the final and South Africa's win?
Yeah, I didn't see that coming, I have to say. I tipped South Africa right before the World Cup and I thought they'd get through it, but they really went through without causing many ripples, and the way that England played in the semi-final, I wouldn't agree that they were slight favourites. They were heavy favourites, the way they had played. But all the red flags were there for them. When you have a semi-final like that, we've seen it so often, that you can, you know, as Warren Gatland warned them, had they already played the final. But to be honest with you, I think South Africa just changed the game plan and got absolutely dug into England. And England looked nervy. They did a few crazy things. Their handling skills were very poor, which we haven't seen in a long time from them. And South Africa just won every little battle that they possibly could. And I suppose centred around the fact is if your scrum is under pressure, you're going to lose a rugby game.
Yeah, and great stuff too for Razzy Rasmus Shane, who we know well from his time at Munster, of course, originally as director of rugby, and then after Anthony Foley's tragic death, he took over as head coach and has spent time coaching on this island in this country, and it's great for him to have lifted that World Cup.
That's amazing. And don't forget Felix Jones, the first ever Irishman to win a Rugby World Cup medal. He's in the backroom staff there. He was with Munster until he was let go last season, and it's fantastic seeing Razzy Rasmus whipped him up straight away, brought him down there, and he's had a great effect in what's going on. It's amazing to think that the way the South African setup is now, Razzy is stepping down. Like, he only went in as a caretaker coach for a couple of seasons as they had let go of the previous one, and he was actually in to be the director of rugby. So it's going to be interesting to see what way they sort themselves out. But it's been amazing. I think their captain, Khaleesi, has been just an absolutely massive ambassador for our sport. And everything that he said after the games, how much it means to South Africa again in the doldrums as a country, you know, with the currency falling all the time, their economy isn't going great, and obviously the troubles that we always are aware of that are down there, how important it was to them and how much they use that as motivation, with again Razzy Rasmus talking about that as well.
Let's hear that clip now from the South Africa captain, Sia Khaleesi, speaking to the TV channels after yesterday's game.
I was grateful for everything that the team has been through. You know, we face a lot of challenges, but you know, the people of South Africa have gotten behind us, and we are so grateful for the people of South Africa. And you know, we have so many problems in our country, but to have a team like this, we know we come from different backgrounds, different races, and we came together with one goal and we wanted to achieve it. I really hope that we've done that for South Africa, to show that we can pull together if we want to win and achieve something.
Shane, lastly, just on that, like, it's so nice to hear, you know, a sports person and a captain who has just won the World Cup speaking so honestly and so nicely about not just the sport. And we hear all the time, or lots of the time, you know, sports players and managers a lot of the time talking rubbish because they're afraid of what they might say might be used against them or whatever. But just to hear someone speaking so honestly about their country and what it means to have won a match really says it all.
Yeah, and it just shows how level-headed he is. Like, obviously the emotions were absolutely rolling around him at the time, and he's able to keep his voice nice and calm and just get that message across. It really just shows you the effect sport can have, and in this case rugby can have, on a greater community, because clearly for them the motivation isn't just winning or losing. They represent in their eyes something far, far more important than that. And you know, it was amazing to see what they did. They clinically dismantled England, and you know, their sin, everything, how they behaved on the pitch and off the pitch, has been an absolute credit to the country, and it was an amazing win.
And Shane, World Cup over now, 4 more years till the next one, a long wait for everybody in Ireland, and you know, Ireland's disappointment aside, did you enjoy this year's competition, and was it a success, of course, apart from the weather, I suppose?
Yeah, look, I think it was amazing the way the Japanese people responded to us. Nearly every game was very, very close to a sellout, no matter who was playing. Every word coming back from the country is that it was an absolutely amazing tournament. The hosts were fantastic. They couldn't do enough for you. Obviously, there was the controversies with the weather. And to me, the only gripe I would have had was the quality of the refereeing, particularly against the Tier 2 nations in the pool stages. But other than that, look, there's no doubt it was an absolutely massive, massive success. And a lot of people are going to leave there with fantastic memories.
Great stuff, Shane Byrne. Thanks for your time over the last month or so. We'll see you soon.
All right, take care, man.
Nathan, hockey and the Irish hockey team in Olympic qualifiers, and like Energia Park, a rugby stadium with like a hockey pitch on it, but only for the game and the second leg. And it's like stuff on Twitter last night, we're going to have to play the second leg tonight, having drama Canada last night.
Yeah, and like as you mentioned there, it finished nil all between Ireland women and Canada in that qualifier. It was a hard fought draw, but again, the rain didn't really help. It was absolutely pouring down at Energy Stadium. Despite Ireland having a tiny bit more of the possession, they didn't really force the Canada keeper to make any shots at all. As you said, the second leg takes place tonight at 10 past 7 at the same stadium, at Energy Stadium. And Sean Dancer said, will hope that they can improve on their performance if they are to qualify.
League of Ireland on 98FM. The best place on the radio for the SSE Airtricity League.
Now, the Soho Tells Women's FAI Cup final takes centre stage at the Aviva Stadium today at 5 past 12. I'll be there reporting for 98FM and Off the Ball. And it's time to preview that game now. We'll hear in a moment from the Wexford Youth manager Tom Elms. But first, it's the Piedmont boss James O'Callaghan, a league winning manager very recently.
And that's great, Jamie. The girls have been brilliant all season. They've been really consistent. They've worked really hard, you know, so it was great to get to win the league.
You've had some really great games this season against the likes of Wexford, and in recent weeks the couple of matches against Shells have just been probably really good preparation for what you'll face here on Sunday.
Yeah, you know, we only lost one game all season and drew two, and it still went to the last game of the season. So, you know, some credit needs to go to Shelbourne, who really made that happen. But, you know, it's been a really tough league. The quality's been really good, so we're just delighted.
So you move now to Cup Final week. What's your own feelings as a manager getting ready for what is your second Cup Final in a couple of years? Of course, well, you were here last year, you had that experience, but what words do you use to describe how you're feeling at the moment?
No, we're really excited. You know, as I said, it was great to win the league, so that's a bit of pressure off us. So we're trying to enjoy the week, and we look forward to going to the Aviva on Sunday. You know, even though it's great to get there, it's not a great place to go if you don't get the result. So, you know, we're training really hard this week. You know, just it's all a big focus on Sunday.
How does Cup Final week work for you as the manager?
Again, we try to just keep as a normal week, and we train, do our usual training sessions, you know, and just the same focus. We're playing Wexford. We've played them three times this season already. Every time we played them, it's been really, really competitive. They're a top side. They probably haven't been as consistent in the league this year as they would have liked, but they still made the final of the League Cup, and they're in the final here on Sunday. So it's going to be a really tough game.
And the Aviva itself is an amazing place to play a football match, and we've heard this week calls for maybe the women's game to compete on a different day to the men, or in Talla Stadium, where you might get an 8,000 sellout. I've been covering all the women's national games in Talla, and in recent weeks and months, it's been a great place to for the girls to play, given it's like full. This place won't even be full for the men's match. Have you heard that debate, and what's your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I've seen that on social media, some of the comments being made, but I think the girls, in fairness to them, they really want to play here. I don't think you see a lot of the top games get played here, even the Leinster senior finals matches get played here. They don't fill it out either. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there should be this big thing about, well, the women don't fill it, they shouldn't play there. The women really want to play there, and I think that's fair enough.
And lastly, if your team was to win it and, you know, be able to couple with the success of the season and other competitions and stuff, what would that mean to everybody at the club?
Listen, Piedmont, you know, the setup in Piedmont in terms of the school boy and school girl system is really good. You know, they produce lots and lots of players all the time. You know, so for the club, the committee members, the volunteers, everybody involved in Piedmont, you know, for us to win the league was a great achievement, and they're all delighted with that. So everybody's just looking forward to putting in a good performance now on Sunday.
The Piedmont manager James O'Callaghan, and he'll be against Tom Elms of Wexford today.
Yeah, no, it's nice to be back again. It's a great place to come and play. You're not going to get too many opportunities, play and manage. You're not going to get too many opportunities, so you have to enjoy them while you're here.
Yeah, this time last year you were again preparing to face Piedmont in the final. You won the final 1-0. What's your memories of that day?
It just flew by. It was my first time here as a manager. It was a fantastic experience. Again, like it's like any other game, it's 90 minutes, so you just have to prepare for that. But again, on the day, I thought that the girls played, you know, at their skin on the day, and the goal we scored with Katrina Parrick was fantastic. And looking at the squad that we have going into it this time, I think we've actually strengthened ourselves. I'm also aware of conscious of the fact that PMAT have probably gelled together over this year, and they're probably a stronger team coming into as well. But we're very confident in what we have this year.
And the task at hand is against the league champions. They've had a couple of great games recently against Shelburne, which I'm sure you've been able to watch. What do you make of the challenge that you'll face on Sunday?
Yeah, look, straight away, the games we've had this year against the top three sides is always going to be close. There's been nothing between us. We're able to look back at the games and see where we can be a little bit better, and maybe where we've been a little bit unfortunate. And it just helps you prepare. But again, we do face each other quite a few times during the year, so we have a good idea of what's coming. But I think all on the day, it comes down to, sometimes it comes down to that little bit of luck, or maybe the team that, you know, puts in that little bit more effort. And look, that's kind of cup finals, isn't it, really? Cup final day, anything can happen.
And there's been a debate recently as well, a couple of people in the media talking about the final being on the same day as the men's final, and you know, the stadium being so big and maybe not so full for the first match, and you know, should it be in somewhere like Tallaght Stadium with 8,000, as we've seen with the women's national games recently, and you know, have the place packed. Have you got a view on that?
The first time I'd heard it was last year when we played here, and I know they kind of packed out the far side of the stadium, and for the players we spoke to, you know, they just said, look, they wouldn't care if the place was empty. For them, it's about coming to their national stadium and getting an opportunity to play on that pitch. And, you know, they come here and they see the men's first team. I know you can argue the women's senior national team don't play here. And I know they packed out Tallaght the last day, and it's probably something that, you know, is what they want to aim towards. But just for our girls, those opportunities maybe don't come as often. And for them, it was all about just coming out and playing on that surface and you know, being able to say you went and done that. But that's the same for me as well, as a coach and a manager, being able to say that, you know, I was on the sideline here, it's absolutely fantastic. And whilst some of the supporters that came in to watch us would have stayed on and maybe watched the men's game, I don't think too many are coming in that little bit earlier to catch our game with the idea of mainly coming in to watch the men. So I mean, maybe it's whether it's easier to organise with the two on the same day. Maybe the men's final can overshadow the women's final that little bit. But again, for us, it's all about the game. We're just really looking forward to that game and preparing as best we can and coming out with the best result.
That's the voice of Tom Elmsey, Wexford Youth Women's Manager, ahead of his Soho Hotels Cup final today at the Aviva Stadium at 12:05 against Piemont United. Piemont, the league winners, and Wexford beat Piemont 1-0 in last year's final. And we've got pairs of premium level tickets to give away. We've got two pairs on air and one pair on our Twitter page at 98FM. So text or WhatsApp Cup Finals plus your name and where you are, and the number you need is 0877 98 98 98. That's Cup Finals plus your name and where you are, and text or WhatsApp to 0877 98 98 98. Well done to Finn Harps, who will be in the Premier Division next season, after they beat Drogheda 2-0 after extra time, 2-1 in aggregate at Finn Park on Friday, to retain their place in the Premier on one of the worst League of Ireland pitches I've ever seen. If you check at JB Moore Sport on Twitter, I tweeted a photo yesterday, and some Finn Harps fans not too impressed with my thoughts on the pitch, but for me, not acceptable for such an important League of Ireland match. Weather aside, it was really, really, really in poor condition. Now, the Aviva Stadium pitch won't be in poor condition today for the men's final after the ladies' final. It's at 3:40. Dundalk looking to win the treble under Vinnie Perth, and Shamrock Rovers trying to win their first FAI Cup since 1987. They've won the trophy 24 times, the most of any League of Ireland club, and it's that game we're going to preview now. Stephen Bradley and Sean Kavanagh of Shamrock Rovers will be along in just a second, but first it's the Dundalk head coach Vinnie Perth.
Yeah, really looking forward to it. I think there's no doubt that the FAI Cup, in my opinion, has been devalued to a point this season, so I think this is an opportunity for both teams to put a special day on. I think there's no doubt they're the two best teams, and just hope not every cup final is brilliant, and I hope it's similar to the games we played against each other this season, where it's been good free flowing football and been a real showcase, and it's an opportunity for us to represent the league and make people proud of what we have to offer.
Why has it been devalued?
Well, I think there's no doubt for example a quarter final we had to play on a Monday night down in Waterford, and just throwed in an old game against Cork on the Friday before that, where we're trying to win the league. We've had other issues and teams moved, games moved. So this is the showcase cup. We should be very proud of this cup. So people have forgotten about that, and maybe I shouldn't bring it up, but I really hope we can finish it in style here in the Aviva Stadium.
News today that Chris Shields won't be available due to suspension. What happened?
This season we've had a huge amount of adversity. We've had, you know, ridiculous amount of injuries, impact. We've only had one muscle injury again. The semi-final, that was Patrick, played, and we had to play the fixture. Computer decided, well, he's have to play on Monday before that as well. So we've always bounced back. We've always been strong. People like Chris play on the edge, and there's always a fear of that, but we've accepted it, we move on, we're prepared for it, and we've battled the hard way in this cup. We've been in the middle of Europe, we were down in Cove, been away to Waterford, away to Derry and away to Sligo, so if we're going to win this cup, we'll have to do it the hard way, and not having Chris makes it a little bit more difficult than it needs to be.
Is there an argument, given that you had won the league, of maybe not playing him in the last couple of league games because he was on yellows,
there's loads of different scenarios, and I'll speak about that after the cup final. The one thing we've never done is made excuses in any way, shape or form, so it is what it is. We'll accept it, and and move on. Not overly happy about it, but there you go. We have, you know, we've real competition. We've worked on different systems with things like this in mind. You know, we've toyed around with trade the back for argument's sake. So we've a lot we can do, and we're very comfortable with the squad we have.
Having had four cup finals here in a row, will cup final week or cup final day change much, or will it be same?
No, I mean, I think the players are very experienced. But at the same time, it's a different day. It's a special day. It's one of the most special days of your life. We've experienced winning here and we've experienced losing. And I have as a player as well. I've also experienced being left out of a team and being in a team as well. So I get all of that stuff, and it's difficult. Every player will want to play. But we've a fantastic squad, and you could debate our team all day long in terms of who starts. So just a normal week for us in that sense. But there's a little edge to it because it's an opportunity for us to create a little bit of history, and we'll go after it in the right manner. And you know, no matter what happens, we've had a great season this year. It's just a chance to finish it in style.
Full videos of all of our FAI Cup previews on youtube.com/offtheball. That's the Dundalk head coach Vinnie Perth not happy about Chris Shields' suspension, but he'd be very happy if his team can win the treble at around 5:30 this evening. The team facing them are Shamrock Rovers. They haven't won the Cup since 1987, but their most successful League of Ireland club in the Cup, with 24 FAI trophies in their trophy cabinet down there in Tala Stadium. We'll hear from the man who hopes to lead them to it, Stephen Bradley, the manager, and Sean Kavanagh, left back in the team of the year from Ringsend, just around the corner from the stadium. They're both with us next on 98.
98 FMs, now that's what I call sport, with Jamie Moore.
Huge day ahead for Dublin club Shamrock Rovers in the FAI Cup final against Dundalk at the Aviva Stadium at 3:40. I've been chatting to their head coach, Stephen Bradley.
What type of words would you use to describe how everybody at the club is feeling? Yourself, players, fans? Like, it's a great occasion, and I'm sure you're all really excited.
Yeah, excitement. You have that nervous tension, which is always healthy. We're really looking forward to it. We believe it's going to be a really good game, two good sides. We're really looking forward to it.
How does cup final week work for you as the manager, and are you extra busy given it's an extra couple of days and a bigger game as such, or?
No, we try and keep training and everything as normal as possible. Obviously, all the media that comes with the final keeps you on your toes and keeps you busy, but other than that, we try and keep everything as normal as possible.
And you say that nervous tension that yourself and the players have, that's a good thing to have before a big match, isn't it?
Yeah, I always felt there was when I played, and now as a manager before big games, it's nice to get that. Like I said, once you harness it and use it in the right way, and it can be a real positive.
So roll us back to 2010, the last time you played here. I think it was the last time. Did you play here after that, or was it 2010 the final?
Yeah, 2010. Sligo, obviously. We got beat in Penos, but what I can remember of the game was a decent game. Sligo were a good side then, and obviously they beat us in Penos.
Would you have thought then that it would be 9 years until Rovers were back in a final? I know you didn't know you were going to be the manager and stuff, but like it's been a long wait.
Look, I think when you get the games like this and finals, you can't take them for granted, because like you said, it's 9 years. You don't know when the next one is, and you got to grasp it and really embrace it. And hopefully, we can do that this Sunday.
Yeah, I spoke to Sean Kavanagh. He's not played here, but he's played a lot of games in the Championship. Jack Byrne and Graham Burke have great experience here. A lot of your other players have played in big games and big stadiums across the world, as have Dundalk. So it being here and in a big stadium and a big crowd, does that make much difference to how people will play and coach and stuff?
No, I don't think so. I think, like you said, they've obviously played here for a few years, so they're well used to it. Our players have played in a lot of big games throughout their career. We've 6 full internationals, so I don't see any of the stadium or the crowd or the pitch being an issue for either team. I just see two teams that will be going all out to win the game.
And the games against Dundalk over the last couple of seasons, particularly this season again, you know, they've been tight, they've been exciting. Will this one be any different to the ones you faced them against before?
I don't think so. I think, like you said, they're two really good sides. When we played each other, it's been very tight. It's been small margins in the games. Some big calls have swung them games either way. Like I said, hopefully on Sunday, them small margins are with us, but it's going to be a really good game.
And the crowd as well, Stephen, 36,000 here for that final you played in 2010, the biggest of all of the finals so far. Been a great push of the last few weeks to try and get this even bigger. And Shamrock Rovers has done a great job. I love the videos of the fans abroad coming home to watch the match and stuff. What would you say to like a neutral who's not a League of Ireland fan that goes to watch Premier League games or watches Ireland on the telly and thinks League of Ireland is crap, about coming here spending €15 to come and watch the two best teams on Sunday?
Yeah, well, you have two of the best teams in the country. You have full internationals on the pitch. You've got some fantastic footballers on the pitch. And if you haven't seen the game before and you come to the game on Sunday, I'm sure you'll walk away very impressed with what you see.
Because it's a good chance. you know, to show with, you know, debates at the moment about where the football is going and the FAI, and, you know, debates about where the league is, to go, well, these are our two best teams in our best stadium, and this is what we can show you.
Yeah, and I don't doubt that both teams will put their best foot forward. I think both teams are full of top players, and they've shown, both teams have shown on big occasions, they show up and they play, and like I said, I don't see Sunday being any different.
And lastly, I know you spoke during the week to the newspapers about your own job you've done and how excited you are to be there on the sideline on Sunday leading the team, and about maybe some of the stick you would have got over the previous couple of years as well. If your team could win this trophy, what would that mean to you as the manager, as a young manager, your first job and you know, a first major trophy if you can do?
No, look, we'll just concentrate on trying to win the game over 90 minutes, and everyone knows what it means to this club and what it means to the players and the fans and the staff, everyone involved, not just myself. So like I said, we'll do everything possible to try and make that reality on Sunday.
What year is your birthday? Around 87, 86?
84.
My God, I said to Sean Kavanagh, because he's 94 and I'm 89, that you might have been about 3 when Rovers last won the league. So that was actually, or the cup, that was, not the league, the cup. That was a decent guess, but you don't remember much about it, I'm sure.
No, I don't. I'm still in nappies, obviously.
But that history is something that the club has spoken about a lot, and if you could win the 25th as well, like, just the weight, and it would just be amazing for your club, wouldn't it?
Yeah, no, it would. It's obviously, there's no going away from how much it means to everyone involved in the club. We know that as a group of players, a group of staff, and as a group as a whole, we understand that, we know that. And like, we've spoke to the players about embracing that and going and enjoying the occasion on Sunday.
The Shamrock Rovers head coach, Stephen Bradley. Now, local lad Sean Kavanagh will be playing in his local stadium, and he can't wait for kickoff.
Yeah, good, not too bad. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Have you played here before? I don't think you have.
No, I've never played here. I've obviously been to watch a few games, and that's it, but I've never actually played here. I've been in the dressing room, so looking forward to it.
What's your expectations from playing in the cup final up the road from where you live?
Obviously, I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait. I'll have a lot of people here, only being down the road, and yeah, just like I said, I'm looking forward to it, and just, yeah, can't wait really.
How many friends, family, people are coming to watch you?
I think I have probably at least 30. Well, I think my family got about 20, 25, and then I'll have maybe 5 or 10 friends as well, so I'll have, yeah, probably the guts of 30, 35 people.
What would that mean to you to be playing, like, literally, you could probably, if you stood on the roof of the stadium, like, throw a rock through your house window, you're that close, like?
Yeah, it's great, it's nice, I could actually, from my house I can see the stadium, so, yeah, it's a nice feeling, and it's always one that I said I'd love to play here, and it's weird, because any time I drive by with my son in the car, he'd say, oh, Daddy, there's your football match. So he's been saying that since the start of the season, so it's obviously, it's one that's worked out well, and yeah, I was just happy when we got here. I was always thought about that moment where he was saying that.
His name is Freddie, and he'll be here, I'm sure, to watch you. When you're, like, warming up and national anthems and stuff, will you look for your family? Will you be able to take a minute to kind of give them a wave and say hi, or is it total in the zone?
No, I normally do that most games in Tala. I know where they sit, so when we come out and line up, I'd have a little wave up, and I'll try spot them, but obviously there'll be a bigger crowd here, I think, so it'll probably be harder, but I'll try spot them and see if I can.
Now, you've experienced in the UK playing in the Championship for Fulham in front of big crowds, so big crowds and big stadiums won't be something new to you. A lot of your teammates would have been the same as well, so from that sense, the same with Dundalk, they've been here for the last 4 seasons, there's not too much new about playing in big stadiums.
Yeah, I don't think you'll probably get the fright factor of maybe, I don't know, many people that haven't played in front of crowds, or say 15, 16 year old lad, but I've obviously personally played in front of some big crowds, and like you said, the Dundalk lads have been here, we have a few that's been the cup final, and you have the likes of Jack and Graham who've already played here, and a couple more internationals as well, so I think we're well used to it.
The run in the FAI Cup, that famous game in Galway when Lee Grace pops up in the last minute, and then the other most memorable moment for me is beating Bohemians 2-0 at Dalymount Park in the semi-final too. So you had to do things the hard way, given you thought in that Galway game it could have been, you know, disaster, replay and whatever, and then the Bowes game, having beaten them for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, like you said, the Galway game could have been disaster. They obviously played well first half, they were 1-0 up, and yeah, we got the late winner, Greener scored, made it 1-1, and then I thought to myself, it's a replay, it's going to be, and then Lee popped up with a great header and put us through, and like you said, we beat Bowes, which was nice at their place, and now we're here.
What do you remember about the games against the team you face on Sunday, Dundalk? They've beaten you to the league by 11 points, but they've been tight games. I've been, I think, three of the four in the league, and particularly one of the games in Tala, I think they won, but you guys played very, very well. What's your memories of the games against them?
Yeah, they've been all right. I think they've obviously had... they've obviously beat us a couple of times this year, and I think the last game in Oriel, I thought we played quite well. They obviously beat us 3-2, and the one in Tala, we played well as well, but they beat us. So now I'm looking forward to it, and be a good game for the neutrals as well, I think.
There's been lots of comment this week about Dundalk and being favourites, and I don't really understand people that say that, because for me it's a 50-50 game. I think it's the two best teams, similar to Cork and Dundalk the previous years. Like, most people think that Dundalk will just win this match because they've won the league. Yeah. I'm sure you guys are happy to hear that, because it might add a little bit of extra motivation for you.
Yeah, for me, I wouldn't really read into to any of that. Like, even if people are coming out saying we're favourites, I wouldn't read into it. But obviously, they've won the league. They've won the other cup as well. And they've been here and won it the last couple of years, I think. And they'll obviously be favourites. But for me, I won't read into it. And I don't think any of the lads will either.
What are the keys to winning these big games against the other big teams in the league? And, you know, you're not sure if you're playing left back, who'll play on the right wing for Dundalk, but whoever it will be, you know, you're going to face a difficult opponent. And Sean Gannon raiding up the wing, who's the right back in the team of the year, and you're the left back. So for you, what are the keys to a good performance and to try and win this game?
Just have to, I think, prepare for it like any other game I will. And just go out on the day and hopefully do as best I can. Hopefully it falls into place. I think you need a little bit of luck as well. On the day, I think you might need a decision here or there to go for you, but I think for me personally, I'll just prepare for it as normal.
You're born 94?
Yeah.
I'm born 89, so neither of us were alive when the Rovers last won the league, 86-87. A 3-0 win over Dundalk, actually, I think it was, at Dalyman Park at the time. And I know everyone talks about the weight and the 24 cups that Rovers have. And when Pats won the cup here in 2013, it was 50-odd years for them. It's a long wait, and most of the players weren't born. The manager, probably Stephen Bradley, would have been 3 or 4 when that happened. So it's a long time since Rovers have won the cup.
Yeah, it's been a long time. And obviously, there's a lot of fans in Ring's End, and they've sort of gave me a little reminder every now and again. But yeah, it's been a long time, and hopefully we can break that record on Sunday.
And lastly for you, Cavo, in the team of the year, you've had a really good season. I've got a record saying, you know, you're one of the best players in the league. Your left foot, that reverse pass that every team knows you want to play, yet they can't stop it happening, is something that you've just mastered this season. And I know you've spoken about being happy to be home. You signed a new deal to stay at Rovers for the next couple of seasons too, and a great place to end this season on a happy note for you as a footballer coming home up the road from your house and back home happy playing football.
Yeah, I don't think you could write it really. Being around the corner, being back home, playing football and enjoying your football, it's massive. And hopefully, I can go and finish the season on Sunday happily again.
Have you allowed yourself to picture high-fiving that trophy out there yet?
No, I haven't. I don't think I'll be one of them that I walk by it and touch it. Or I think, oh, Janie, I could be lifting that. But I just, like I said earlier, prepare for the game and play the game. Hopefully, it goes their way.
That's it for another week on the show. Thanks to all of our guests. We'll speak to you next Sunday, folks. Enjoy the games. Bye bye.